reason to fire at us from what was essentially point blank range.
If you refuse to disperse, it seems like they might have some sort of rationale.
I don't see why refusing to follow orders is rationale to violently attack people. I mean, certainly if you want to try and cite someone or arrest them for breaking some kind of city ordinance, then sure. But attacking us with weapons, certainly, you know, less than lethal weapons, but weapons nonetheless, I think is something that police really shouldn't be doing unless they really are in danger. And people marching and demanding justice does not put police in danger.
And what's your name?
My name's Justin Kurtzen.
Hi, I'm with KBOO Radio. Yes. Would you care to say what your complaint is?
Yes, I would. My complaint is that the police killing of an unarmed citizen is completely unacceptable, whether it's in Ferguson or Portland or anywhere in this country. And yet this has been happening in my own community. Over the years I've lived here, I can recall 5 such incidents. I live in North Portland, and the trouble with these type of incidents is they cause a ripple effect such that any progress that we've made in people getting along and easing racial tensions is completely erased by these acts of violence of the police against unarmed, often people of color. And what I mean by ripple effect is it poisons the community. I personally took care of Kendra James's grandmother when she had a heart attack after her granddaughter was killed by the police. I was working at OHSU as a respiratory therapist and took care of Kendra's grandmother. And it was a completely preventable death for both of them. And I would just like to see accountability. There is no record of how many people have been killed by the police. When you go to try to find out how many, you cannot find any data on it. I would like to see cameras on every police recording their interactions, and I would like to see a database of how many people have been killed by the police. That's my complaint.
Thank you.
On December 1st at 6:30 p.m., tune in to Prison Pipeline. We'll be discussing decriminalizing homelessness with Portland area activists Monica Beamer and Ibrahim Mubarak. They're members of the Western Regional Advocacy Project and are involved with a homeless Bill of Rights campaign, which would protect the rights of all persons to rest. We discuss how people with prior records are vulnerable to becoming houseless, and the history of vulnerable populations being criminalized, as well as how our society could save money by protecting rather than criminalizing people who do not have a safe place to sleep. Tune in on December 1st at 6:30 p.m.
The time is 6:03 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next on KBOO, it's Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Holla! Welcome to the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists segment of Labor Radio, here on KBOO, where the heart of the community comes alive 7 days a week. My name is Tina Turner Morfitt. I'm a member of the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees and the current president of the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. And as usual, I'm joined by my sisters in the struggle.
Hello, I'm Deborah Hall, a member of the American Federation of Teachers here in Oregon and also a member of the Portland NAACP. Thank you.
And I'm Dr. Audrey Terrell, president of the Portland NAACP and retired union executive for the United Auto Workers.
Tonight, we are celebrating the month of December, and that our segment is about reflections. As you know, the witching hour is coming, the end of the year. And so what we thought we would do is to have a discussion amongst ourselves about the various shows that we've done and the shows that have touched our hearts over the past year. Each of us has selected a segment that we believe really impacted us a lot. And we look forward to discussing those things with you. The first reflection highlights the struggles of being an activist, but on an international front. And Deborah is going to kind of reminisce about our show that we did regarding that.
Thanks, Tina. And good evening, KBOO listeners. Thanks for being here with us this evening. I was really taken by the interview that we did with John Jarl Castro, who is the president of the Buenaventure Colombian Port Workers Union. We did a segment with him on last October, and he was here doing a presentation entitled No Longer Shackled by Chains, but by Our Economic Conditions. And what I believe for me stood out in the young man's presentation were, although he's from another country, he doesn't live here in the United States, the struggles that they are facing in his country as far as for their members of color are not vastly different than the struggles that we face here. Another thing that he was able to tie in and that really struck a nerve with me are what the effects of our laws and our processes here in the United States have on people in other countries. He talked about how the privatization of the docks and the ports in his country had caused them and their union brotherhood and sisterhoods now to be fighting amongst their union members of color and non-color for the work. And so it's doesn't feel like it was enough for the folks to be in a union and to have those protections because the work has been privatized and there's less work. Now, just like some of the struggles that I see here, we're kind of playing off each other in our unions as far as which segment of our membership, you know, has work, which segment of our membership does not. And I would like to, I guess, impress upon folks that, and it is my humble feeling that the struggles that we're having, the bottom line is not about the color of our skin or what our sex is. It's because we're workers and we are trying to get a more equal portion of the pie for the work that we do and the benefits that we provide for our countries and our societies and the economies that we have to deal with. And I'd like for folks, if you could, when you're listening to folks' struggles, to kind of put that in as a factor, because I know some things have happened in this last week, in the last months, and we're having some discussions about things. But bottom line is, it's about economic empowerment. If the folks that are at the top can keep us all down here fighting about these little squabbles, and all we're going to get them is 10 cents. We're never going to get them a quarter. We're never going to snatch 50 cents out of their hands. If we can talk about you're wrong because you're this color and you're wrong because you're this sex and there's something wrong with you because you want to, you know, take some different medication. It's all about money. I don't think that it's those things that matter. And I thank John Castro for coming to bring that message to us so that we could open our eyes and understand that not only we're not the only ones going through these struggles here in this country. Thank you for the question, Tina.
So, Deborah, I remember that interview with John. And I also, the thing that I took away from it was the courage that he demonstrated being just out there talking about unionization and the rights of workers.
Thank you for that reminder, because one thing that we don't face so much in this country are folks can step out and talk about things, you know, based economically and in their unions and not face anything as far as maybe death threats and things. But in his country, union workers disappear. People are murdered. People are killed. And for him to take off and go throughout his nation and through our nation to bring people that message was an extremely, extremely brave thing to do, because, quite frankly, he could probably face death by some in the neck of the woods where he's from. And yeah. So the bravery of that brother really stood out.
And the other thing, in talking to him, it brought into mind the whole fast track of the TTP. I mean, we have reasons as to why we don't like that Trans-Pacific Partnership. But he really brought home to us what the actual impact is on on regular workers.
Right, correct. Because as he stated, that their docks at one point in time were owned, they were publicly owned, and now that they become privately owned, what's happening is that there's a selection process now as far as which set of unions are going to get the work. Not that any union is going to get the work, but now they're fighting amongst because there's less work, and it appears that what's happening in their country is that the dock workers of color are getting less work. They're getting less contracts coming through their ports, and so, you know, some of the same things that are happening here. They've been able to kind of portion people off based on their colors in their union, and you know, set them one group up against the other.
The other thing that kind of impressed me, or actually it's not impressive at all, but the other thing I found that was really stark was that there did not appear to be any kind of give back to any of the people who lived in close proximity of these docks.
Right. Very much so. It's a pretty dire situation that can, you know, and hopefully there has been some light brought to it. I haven't checked in in the last couple of months to see if things have gotten better. But as far as folks working in the closer proximity, no special things given to them at all. No special considerations at all.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, before we sign off on that topic, can you give our listeners a quick Reader's Digest version of how he came to Oregon?
He came to Oregon through, we were brought to, he was brought to our attention through Jamie Partridge working, and John Walsh. And I believe the folks through the, I'm going to get this wrong. Witness for Peace Northwest and the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign and Jobs with Justice and Portland Central American Solidarity Committee were the co-sponsors of the event, and the folks that were responsible for bringing John Castro here. He had interpreters, and so he was taken around to several different groups, and we got the distinct privilege to be the first group to interview him, and we had him right here on the show with his interpreter, which was huge for us. So,
well, great, Deborah. Thank you for that huge shout out for all those other agencies that do their part in trying to equalize the needs and rights of workers. So the second segment, incident or highlight that we are going to talk about, I'll take care of that. And that is with our work with the Urban League. As you know, we had the Urban League. We interviewed them twice. In the first instance, we talked to them about Cover Oregon. And this is when we were in the throes of the Oregon healthcare program not working. And they had an undaunting task of trying to register as many people as possible. And what they discovered was people that they were trying to register didn't have basic knowledge of some of the regular healthcare lingo. And so it was quite a task to try and find an appropriate insurance company or insurance program for individuals who had never been insured before. And so we were very blessed in that the Urban League did a fantastic job of helping to register Oregon citizens, and that nationally things were just a hot mess. And it ended up, and it still is. We're still trying to sort out the electronic part, but the paper part, you know, when you actually have to sit down and they had individuals helping people to actually fill out the forms so that they could get their health care. So for me, I was really moved by that, and that they are allowing and helping American citizens get insurance, and that we have so many people who are, you know, an illness away from bankruptcy, and we have so many people who used our emergency rooms only when they became critical, which in some cases ended up being fatal. And so for me, I thought that that was a very highlighting a great show, and that this was something that was tangible, and that they were doing something for Oregon citizens. Now, the other interview that we had was with Ban the Box. And again, this is a Portland ordinance. It's not something you can vote on. But that was our segment last month. And what we're trying to do is trying to bridge that gap between unions and communities of color. Because communities of colors, somehow they have a higher percentage of individuals of who have been convicted of various crimes. And so when you fill out that application and employers see that you've checked that box that indicate that you have you've been convicted, then what happens is they usually will throw the application away. And then the individual never gets an opportunity to offer up an explanation of what exactly the circumstances were. In a lot of cases, these are things that happen in their, you know, teenage years or their early 20s or 30s. And here it is, you know, they're applying for a job and they're 40, 50, and 60 years old and again, are not being given due consideration. And so for me, that is, again, something very tangible, and that it is a direct effort to get people back to work. You can always create the jobs, but in order to fill them, you have to have qualified candidates in order to do that. And so I was really grateful in that we were able to bring the Urban League onto our show because, again, when you look at the unemployment rate in the black and brown neighborhoods, there it's much, much higher than it is in just general America. And so I saw the issue of Ban the Box as being one in order to kind of level that playing field. So, right? Okay. So, the next highlighted incident, Sister Terrell will give us her insights on what moved her this past year.
Well, I just want to say all the shows were so inspiring, and we, all three of us, are activists in our own right. And it was so hard to even just to think about what particular show was a highlight, because all of this is part of our passion as activists. But I'd just like to talk about that this weekend Reverend Jesse Jackson was here, and all of us in the union movement know that he's been a part of the labor movement and some rallies that we've seen and heard or part of over the past 40 years. So to see him was a norm for me, especially coming and retiring from the staff of the UAW, where we spent a lot of time working with him. But in highlighting some of the things that he said, I was at the breakfast and the services at Emmanuel Church on yesterday. And I'm still a kind of a person that listens, and I'm motivated by someone, especially of experience, who's seen the whole thing, who marched with Martin Luther King, who has been continually fighting year after year on the issues. Number one issue, getting jobs. And he said a couple of things that was so inspiring, was why he was here on the Pacific Northwest. He said, this is where the jobs are. And he was going to see Microsoft and Intel and these other lawyers in Silicon Valley, these corporations that are hiring. But he said something to us, especially about the situation that's happening in Ferguson, that we got to be careful not to, it's all wrong. He says, those police not being indicted for their crime, for shooting innocent people, that is wrong. But we got to be careful not to get distracted. And that he was here concerned about the accessibility of jobs, empowerment for people. And that the numbers in the with Microsoft and with the numbers with at the executive level of Intel, it just didn't pan out. You have 189 executive board members. Only one of them is of African-American descent. So he was here to go and talk with those large corporations. Portland, the Pacific Northwest, everyone's turned toward this area. I went to Sehe the other night. And Sehe, as you know, is all of the people of color that come relocate to Portland. There were 47 people that had relocated working on a job, coming here for jobs that Sehe had welcomed to the Portland area. So I'm saying all that to say is that labor, unions, it's a high time for us as we need to get focused on the issues because we don't want to get distracted either. And I said all that to say because we've had some rallies here. And I was part of the rally. And I know many of you saw it on television where they were, it seemed like the news gave 95% to the wrong, to the people walking on the freeway and the vandalism. But they didn't see the solidarity. I was there and I was at the front. I could look out and see the thousands of people of various ethnicities talking about the issues, various organizations coming to the podium, the Albino Ministerial Alliance, the Urban League, the NAACP, Portland State University representative, various ethnicities was coming to the Portland a podium talking about the issues, how this is important to us, protesting not only what happened to the non-indictment of Darren Wilson, but how this is injustices is just not right. But when you looked out and saw the thousands of people holding up their cell phones and shouting out together and then marching through the streets, we didn't do any harm. We didn't knock over cans or vandalize any stores. We were in uniform. We were just screaming, justice, justice, you know. And it was just marvelous. We didn't get to see that in the media. All we saw was a negative. And saying as an activist, and we are social activists, community activists, the struggle continues. And I think Jesse, for me, was came here to reiterate just where we are. Just as important to have accessibility to jobs and have money, because some of those young, if there were some jobs, those young fellows would have been at work. They wouldn't have been up all night rallying because they had to get up and go home and get some sleep so they can get up and go to them jobs. So we got to be careful. And that was one of the things he said. And if you don't mind, I'd just like to elaborate on a couple of things he said, because as an academician, I'm a note taker. And some people speak, I listen. And being around him, and you all been around him for years, know that he's a thinking man. And he's looked at it as a whole, as the global process as a whole, and that we are all a concern. He says, we don't want to adjust to oppression. We just don't want to get satisfied with they killed another African-American youth or they killed another. The police, no, we don't want to adjust to oppression. And he said, racism is a mental disease and gender inequality is a cultural sickness. And he, you know, as you all know around Reverend Jackson, he makes you think. He makes you think, and I really took a lot of thoughts away from me. And he says, if you have justice, it will lead to peace. And we all want peace, but you got to have justice. And he said, bricks and sticks and stones is not on our agenda as cultural activists. We should turn pain to power. Justice leads to power. A couple of the things he said, I just want to share with you. He says, power unchecked is deadly. You know that sounds like Jesse. I may not sound like him. But that's how he brings out his point. If you don't check this power, who's got the power? They may need to be checked, because if they're not being checked, it's deadly. And he said so many other impressive things. He says, we must not take the this what's happening in Ferguson as a distraction. He really elaborated. There are things we must continue to do, and that's why he was here in the Portland area, so he can go to these corporations and ask them, what do we need to do to get these jobs?
Right.
You know, so the people of color, people can get these jobs. And we won't be having, we don't want to get distracted by this killing and these police shootings and stuff. But also one other thing I just want to elaborate on, that the NAACP had a Women of Honor luncheon, the second annual one, last night. And it was at a time, and you got to remember, we are activists. We not only we activate in the past, we've been activists in the past, and we continue to be activists, but we look out for the future. So the NAACP, we honored passing the baton. Last year, we honored Avail Gourley and Margaret Carter and Hornbuckle, Ms. Hornbuckle, which I'm so glad we did. I am so glad we did. But this year we honored some other young women who were entertainers, and Kobe, what was Kobe's last name? I can't remember. She's at Wells Fargo. Her boss was there, the president of Wells Fargo. I'm just saying, it's a time that we embrace these young adults that are coming into leadership, especially those of us who are have been on this road a long time. And when I looked at Reverend Jackson, I said, oh my God, he's been doing this a long time. But the fight remains the same for us to continue, not only continue, but mentor other young adults. So I just wanted to add that the NAACP on Sunday afternoon, we honored about six young women in their 30s, you know, and it was just made us so proud to be able to reach back, touch them. And I told them personally at the closing remarks, I says, you're being watched. And when you're in that boardroom, which it may just be one of you as a female and one of you as a person of color, you representing me. And I want you to be able to know that we got your back. We're here supporting you. And that's what we need right now, is to support one another. That's what we call solidarity in the labor movement. We believe in supporting our brothers and sisters to get things done, fairness, equality, justice, all of that, so we can live in a world that's free for all. Free for all. And I say this in the same, but it was so hard to decide which particular show was great, because I began to think of this one and I thought of that one. I said, oh, no. And then having people come in to talk about even our the Oregon president, I thought that was encouraging too, because
Tom Chamberlain,
yeah. Because I'm saying, oh, my goodness. You know, he's right on board.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
This is what we're about. So this has been a wonderful year. Tina, and I hope to be many more years with you. I'm excited about even as I get older, but we all work together. We work with the Urban League. We work. You've worked with the NAACP. You worked with the Ministerial Alliance. We worked with the Nigerian people. They came in.
Yes,
the Nigerians. So it's not just about one. It's not just about one area, but it's about all of us. And so I thank you for all the work you do with the Labor Radio and the invite and the doors you've opened for many.
I also want to mention another organization, Portland Rising, who we have just become involved with. And Portland Rising is, I don't want to say an offshoot, like it's lesser than Jobs with Justice, but Portland Rising, what their dedication is good jobs with no cuts, no matter if it's union jobs, non-union jobs, wherever there are jobs where people work. We in Portland Rising want to see that justice is served for all in the work world. And so look for us out there. Look for Portland Rising folks. We got black and red t-shirts and an awesome organization. And we also thank them as the Portland CBTU folks for them reaching out to us to become a part of their group. Thank you.
Yeah. And what I'd like to do is I'd like to announce that in the month of January, we are going to partner with Portland Rising to feature a film called I Stand at the River. And this is a film that depicts the life of Martin Luther King. And so we look forward to bringing that film to you. And so when we have a date, a time, and a place, we will announce that at our next show. And what we'd like to do is be able to have people come out and view the film, because it is really a it is really a picture of how difficult life was for the labor movement, and how people prevailed. Although it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, they stuck together and they really did prevail. And so it's a great film.
And I think too, that's for me, Tina, what feels to be missing now is that stick-togetherness. Because if you heard me mention when I first started talking about our brother who came from Colombia, I mean, the title of his presentation, No Longer Shackled by Chains but by Our Economic Conditions. That's been our story since we got here. So we need to come together as working folks and break those shackles.
Yeah. And so with tonight's show entitled Reflections, again, what we wanted to do was to talk about the core values and talk about the struggles of not just here, but what's happening on a different plane. To remind you that all in all, when all the work is done and the dust is settled, that when you have good union jobs, you are increasing the middle class. You're enabling people to maintain not only their family life, but a life of dignity. And then with the second segment, being able to reach out and talk and make the struggles of those who have nothing, and to help them achieve, yes, at a level that we as union workers have been able to achieve. Yes. And then we have the heart piece, where we talk about solidarity, mm-hmm, about coming together, about not looking at color lines. And so, again, tonight I'd like to thank you for joining us in our half hour of reflection in this month of December.